Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Into the studio, we welcome our head of sales here, Sean Quinn. Hi, Sean.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you back on the programme. Right, now, the Customer Service Awards 2023, did they exceed your expectations following their launch in terms of interactions and nominations and what have you? I mean, obviously, you set the bar higher, but still.
Absolutely. Just crazy. Mm. Over 15,000 nominations, and to be fair, it's actually closer to 16,000.
Yeah.
It was, if we'd got 7,000 or 8,000, Gregor, I thought that was good. That worked well for us. But from the day we sat in here and launched it, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And the great thing was, it was right across every single category. Mm. So we had businesses that they took it upon themselves to self-promote, use social media, which was great. But what blew me away was a lot of the actual businesses had comments beside them. So it was actually their customers took the time to give us information about why they were nominating. And it, I would say probably as much as 60 to 65% had comments. Blew me away.
Mm, okay. Now, the shortlist has been finalised now at this stage. So, in other words, what I'm trying to say here is nominations have closed and the work of getting this down to the shortlist of nominations has been done now. They're available on our website, highlandradio.com. So, what happens next?
So, we have this week, what we've done is we've actually sent out the forms to the shortlisted businesses and they've received them via email. So, what we're basically saying today is, if you haven't received it, please go on to Highland Radio and check to see, have you been shortlisted? If you haven't received, it could be a spam, it could be something to do with email, we could have the wrong information, please contact us at the station here. Mm-hmm. And we'll be delighted to send out the shortlist form for completion. We've already had a huge response from people who have been shortlisted, but we're probably about 65 to 70% of people who have still got to return us. Good news is, they have plenty of time. They have up until the 26th of April. So today is about, are you shortlisted? We've listed, rather than going through all the, there's 123 in total. I thought the easiest way of doing it is put it onto our website. Mm. Log on to highlandradio.com, click on the link for the Customer Service Awards, and it's all listed there.
All right. Now, also over the next number of weeks, an independent panel of judges will be going over the shortlists to select their winners. And some of the names, Sandra Deveni, who's the general manager at McElhenney's, she is going to be judging the lifestyle sector. Michael Brennan, Donegal Daddy and content creator, of course, so himself, he's also going to be focusing on the motors side of things. Deirdre McGlone, hospitality and tourism advisor, is casting her eye over the community and professional services category. Noel Cunningham, TV personality and hotelier, of course, he's looking over house and home. So you can imagine, you can see these people are well fitted to the areas in which they've been allocated. Emma Morey is a well-known stylist and is focusing on the health and beauty categories. And last but certainly not least is Charlie Boyle, a customer experience consultant who's going to be looking at retail. And Charlie joins him now, and Charlie knows a thing or two about retail. Good morning to you, Charlie.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great to have you on board, and thank you for coming on board with this. I liked this whole concept from the beginning because, you know, businesses have come through a tough time. It continues to be a tough time trading, and I think even in delivering customer service in some areas, a difficulty in recruitment is another challenge. So for these businesses to still have the impact on the public they do, that they would go to the bother of nominating them, and then we arrive at this shortlist, I think it's a really nice thing for business. What's your views, Charlie?
Yeah, I'm glad that we didn't have to go through the list of 16,000. The pain was taken out of it. You know, Corinne spoke to me probably about 6 weeks ago, and she explained what the process was. And, you know, I'm sure at that stage, nobody imagined the response. It's very interesting to see the response, but it's not overly surprising because there's been a big focus on customer service. Customer experience, I suppose, is where we've moved to from customer service. Customer service tends to be the interaction between two humans, maybe at the till. The experience is the greater, or the link, or people call it the continuum of all of those things. So we're looking more at experience in what is an experience economy, because we're buying experiences now. We're not just buying the product. We're not just going in to the petrol station to buy fuel. We're going in for an overall experience that, you know, is involving of so many different things. Michael Honey's would be a really, really good example. We don't have to go outside our own county to get that sort of understanding of what the experience economy means and how important customer experience is. It's said that for the next 30 years, the battleground for the hearts and minds of the consumer and the customers will be fought out in the area of customer experience. So the focus and the amount of people that applied for it is not surprising, especially post-COVID, because the research, you know, research that we would have been involved in January, just a few months ago, would suggest that 78% of people believe that customer service standards have dipped and have dropped after COVID. And the reasons that, you know, you spoke about it there, retention of staff is a big, big area. So a lot of premises are operating maybe with 75% of their full quota of staff. And that's just a reality. And I think as well, customers have to pay into that as well. We can't be as expectant as we were 3 years ago until the sectors like hospitality and retail, until they settle down. So there is a bit of patience needed, you know, there as well, because a lot of companies would be reporting it's not at the level of abuse, but it's high expectation. It's nearly as if we didn't have COVID. COVID changed the world. COVID moved people about. So the recruitment and retention of staff is particularly difficult for the sector, and you know, we need to give the businesses a wee bit of breathing space to come back, settle down. But their part of it is they need to put a focus on this area of customer service. And the sectors, retail and hospitality, would have been criticized in the past for not putting the resources into it, for not investing in staff, for not creating pathways, but they're getting much better at that. Retail in particular is very, very good at this. Yep, that's where I am today. I'm up at a Retail Ireland conference here in Dublin, and it's looking at this whole thing of recruitment and retention.
Yeah, and I think the most important driver, for me anyway, for businesses, I'm not a business person, is word of mouth, a recommendation from someone else. And that was always important. But now it's not just what you might say to me in person. You might say, Charlie, you know, if you've been into this place, it's lovely. The staff are great. Now, I don't know if you've been there or not, but I'm going on to Google or TripAdvisor or different places, particularly Google, I think. So in other words, a bad customer experience now is amplified. And I think businesses need to, and most do, I think, fully recognize that, you know, we get calls in sometimes about a person's bad customer experience and the company's really stubborn with them and it's over about €80 or something. And you're thinking, oh, my word, I hope you understand that, you know, everyone's potentially can hear about this, you know, and I mean, that's a challenge of business and there could be good reason. But as I say, word of mouth now is more important than ever. And it's not word of mouth of someone you meet in person. It's the Google reviews. It's the TripAdvisor reviews. It's the comments on a Facebook page and so on and so forth, Charlie.
Yeah, you know, 20 years ago, we probably had this quotation that, you know, a poor customer experience, the person will go and tell seven others. You can forget about that now. That's 20,000 others. And that's, you know, social media can be very rewarding and also very damaging in equal measure. So you need to be very, very careful how you deal with complaints. Complaints is, you know, a totally different piece of work than it was 20 years ago. Complaints should be seen as a positive, because in Ireland, again, the statistics are quite strong. Ireland and the UK tend to get researched together in this. And 75% of us, and I'm one of them, 74 or 75% of us will simply walk away rather than complain. Mm. So we're not a nation of complainers.
But the problem is, Charlie, with that, and maybe this is something we could all learn from, managers, duty managers, the manager of whatever business, want to hear your complaints in person. Take them to one side, have a quick word. But what happens is people don't, and then they go home and they get on the keyboard. And, you know, I think so we have to, the businesses are of us, really. They're of our community. We have to work with them a little bit. And if you don't have a fantastic experience, let someone on site know. And not necessarily just the person that might be in for 4 hours a week that served you or whatever. You know, the company want to hear it, I think. They should want to hear it.
Yeah, without question. And you know, I suppose the modern quotation and complaints are gold when handled correctly. So it's really about inviting complaints. You know, was everything okay today? Is there anything we could have done better? Is the high the high confidence question and trying to get the customer to make that complaint. Because really, a customer that's complaining is saying, I want to stay and do business with you, but here's the deal. And then they, you know, they'll come out with what their standards or their expectations of the standards are. Those of us, and again, I must say, I'm one of them, if I simply walk away, I don't head for the keyboards, I'll just go somewhere else. You know, I'm nearly afraid that I'll get a row back or it might be rejected. And, you know, so we're all learning. But that, you know, statistics on there is a huge opportunity that 74% of us, you know, walk away. We don't bring it to the attention. And, you know, the word complaint can be seen as a negative, but just bring it to the attention of management. And you don't have to raise your voice. You just say, this is something that happened. And a lot of the time, they're not aware of it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even outside of retail, what might be feeding into some of the experiences is that I hope just that we as a nation don't become intolerant of everything and don't lose the care for another person, that God forbid if we saw them hit it by a car, we'd run over and help them, you know, but would we stand arguing with them if they asked us to put a dog on a lead? Do you know that sort of way? I just hope we as a nation don't lose what we are or what we were at the very least.
Yeah, and I think the other side of that now, there's a lot of research, I suppose, in recent years, and a lot of training goes into looking at the lifetime value of a customer. If you took a business like across the road from you, like the mountain top, both Kelly's and the petrol station, the lifetime value of a customer there is based on 15 years. And the lifetime value of a customer going in there is probably something like 40,000 in euros. Now, would you fall out with an asset worth 40,000 over something that happened at 10 euros, 20 euros? So fixing the complaint to the benefit of the complainant makes total business sense.
Yeah.
You know, having a war over a tenner makes no business sense, yet sometimes that happens.
All right, listen, well, obviously, it's a perfect example of the quality of our judging panel. Charlie Boyle, obviously, you know, fully across the whole retail area at a retail conference, speaking to us ahead of judging our retail category. Charlie, it's been lovely having you on the program, and thanks for coming on board. Great to see you.
Thanks, Greg. Not a problem.
All right,
thank you.
Take care. Yeah, indeed. As I say, Sean, it's about getting the right judges for the right categories and looking right across all of them. You should have done a great job in that regard.
Yeah, it's and it's only right because the final decision we always said would be independent. We've took a bit of time. We've looked to see who's best suited for each category, and I think Charlie's testimony there of his expertise within the retail. He'll judge accordingly based on what he feels is the best output or the best winner of each of the subcategories.
Yeah, judges will deliberate from the 28th of I've got the 28th of April.
Yeah.
To the 23rd of May, is it?
I think it's around about the 5th of May that we'll give them,
and they'll have the important decisions made, of course, in time for our Gala Awards ceremony, which takes place in the Mount Errigal Hotel on Sunday, the 28th of May, 2023. Talk to us about tickets and ticket availability, public or the nominees, or what ways that work?
Yeah, so it's only fair that if you're shortlisted, you have the first refusal on the tickets. So that's what we've done. They're like gold dust.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're definitely going, we will sell out. The capacity is about 480 to 500. I don't know, Greg. It could be that full allocation will go with shortlists. We're trying to be fair with it, so we'll put a max number on. But we'll see how the demand is. We may go general sale as well, but I would see that probably most of them will go from shortlists.
We'll just see how it plays out, okay? It's going to be a great night, I am sure, and it's been it continues to be, because we're still in it, a great process. Because you know what Charlie talks of in terms of what we strive and wish to get to, all of the businesses we can say with confidence that were nominated, not just shortlisted, because someone cared enough to nominate them, have certainly achieved that themselves or in and around it, hence the nominations.
Yeah, like over 15,000 people have taken time to actually go onto the website to vote for somebody. So, you know, everybody's a winner here. If you've been nominated once or 400 times, you're a winner because you've done something right. And as Charlie alluded to, that customer that is your customer, they're there for the long haul. But it's important that you look and you focus on how do you deliver the best customer service experience every day.
Now, the winners will be announced on the night. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. We're not going to divulge no anything. No. It's we have a great night. We have a great lineup set up. It'll be a great night's entertainment. Be real high energy in the room. And
I'm in a sales meeting here, Sean.
You'll create that high energy, Greg. I just know it. I just know you will. And the upside is every person in the room will be a winner.
It's a celebration of business.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Listen, lovely having you in as always, Sean, unless there's anything you've noted that you want to mention.
No, that's it. I suppose just to reiterate that if you haven't received a nomination, check our website. If you have been shortlisted, please send it back by the 26th of April, which is next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's important that we have a deadline on that because we then have to send out to the judges for each category so they can start doing their deliberation.
Brilliant. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
So just double check your work emails, the email that for your business, anything could happen. It could be flagged as spam for some reason. A digit or a number could be out. But the list of all of the shortlisted businesses are on our website, highlandradio.com. So check that. If your business is there, but you haven't received an email, get in contact with us and we can continue the process. And we have a week to do it. And I'm sure your team will get around to all of that, Sean. But just everyone can work together on that. All right, Sean Quinn, Head of Sales at Highland Radio. And thanks again to Charlie Boyle, who's been a guest on this show on a number of occasions talking about retail. And he is judging the retail category and its subcategories as well. All right, and thanks to all the judges. They have a tough job. Next up on the 9 till noon show, we have Karen Callaghan. Good morning to you, Karen.
Morning, Greg.
And our Community Hero Award winner, Roddy Smith. Good morning to you, Roddy. Good to have you in.
Good morning.
And congratulations again to you.
Yeah, thanks very much.
That was a shock, wasn't it?
Very much so.
It's good fun, though, and a worthwhile recognition, wouldn't you agree, Karen?
Definitely, but we have him back down to earth now and we have him harder at work than ever.
In Donegal, you're not on a pedestal too long.
No.
Someone's going to just remind you.
I'm quite happy to fly under the radar.
Okay, I'll just move this here slightly so I make sure I pick you up. Right, okay. Yeah. Newtown Cunningham First Responders, a year old, Roddy. Tell us just briefly the thinking behind the establishment of the Newtown Cunningham First Responders and what gap it was filling besides the obvious, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I said as far back as 2016 that, you know, when we respond in the ambulance, we want CPR, you know, we want CPR ongoing before we get to the scene. So that was always my kind of vision. And when Karen contacted me exactly a year ago, we had the first expression of interest meeting to gauge the interest in the community to try and achieve that goal. Mm. We started going from there. So we developed the group. We had 16 volunteers, and we obviously I knew the training had to be done because I wanted good quality CPR. I wanted to be confident in the kind of service that we were going to deliver. And it snowballed. It got very big, very quick. And I kept nagging the community engagement officer for the National Ambulance Service, Liam Stewart down in the northeast. I kept nagging him for information all the time. So we've developed and we've realised over this past year, we've been very successful in the past year.
In a way, have you done things differently to the point whereby this is actually really quite a good model for elsewhere?
Well, see, that's exactly why we're here. Because we developed fairly quickly to the point where Liam said to me that we were one of the quickest to get going, you know, to go live. We actually went live after a slight delay in December. December alone, we had 5 cardiac arrests in and around the communities of Newton Manor, St Johnston, that we responded to. And if you look at we have a very good fellow in the group and the committee who keeps all our statistics for this year so far. It started from January 1st. And we have responded to 44 calls in and around the community.
Wow.
So about 2.8 calls on average per week.
And Karen, what we don't know really in that, but I think we can probably guess, because we know how important it is. How important it is that people are seen to, as soon as is possible, lives instantly almost being saved. And we can never judge, I presume, from the 44 and the 5 in December. That would be 49 in total, I think. But they, what you were able to do, give these individuals in your own community, which I think is a lovely element of this as well, the best chance.
Exactly. So the calls that we're responding to, we'll respond to. So the important thing, people have contacted us and said, well, how do we contact the first responders in the case of emergency? So it's really important that people know you just contact 999. That is always your first port of call. 999 will get in touch with us if it's a case of someone is choking, someone is having chest pain, someone is in cardiac arrest, or what's the other
stroke.
One? Stroke. So there's four instances that they will, you know, that'll trigger a response to us, and we get a text at the same time as the ambulance goes out. So we're kind of arriving, there's about a 14, we're there roughly about 14 minutes before an ambulance will get there. So in that time, we can offer, in some instances, we can offer treatment, so we can administer aspirin and stuff like that if somebody's having chest pain. But feedback that we've been getting from the community as well, it's having that reassurance that there's somebody there that knows what to do. And, you know, it takes a lot of pressure off the family members. In the case of stroke, it's time critical. So we can have a bag packed. Some houses you go into, we have, you know, an egress for the ambulance. So they come in, we have everything, you know, we have all the medication ready, so they can just come and they're off scene as soon as possible. So, you know, there's a lot of elements to it.
And I think the buy-in, the amount of people that have come forward as volunteers, obviously any service is as good as its people, and the more you have and the more interest is better.
Yeah. And like we're actually, we have a waiting list now of people who want to become responders. So like when we came on, as I say, it's a year ago this week, we were on appealing for volunteers and people who would be interested. And like we got our 16 volunteers that night.
Where were you?
At the meeting.
On this programme?
We were on with John Breslin. Right. I was on with him. So yeah, just putting out a call.
Normally I remember and I was going to say,
putting out a call.
And you hit on something that I didn't think of before, and that's the security or the comfort for people in the community knowing, particularly if maybe you're susceptible or whatever it might be. I never really thought about that, but it really is. It would help people sleep a bit better at night. I don't think that can be overstated. It's a really important thing. I'm glad you brought that up, Karen, because that's having an amazing impact on people, even though you don't have to go and visit them until such time as they might.
And I think, you know, that's evident in the support that we've had from the community. Like the support from the local area and from the businesses, and, you know, even families who we have, you know, responded to. It's been overwhelming.
And Roddy, some of these are really important interventions too, like the aspirin. Again, I'm not pretending I know much about health, but I mean, these are things that you get early on that can best improve people's outcomes as well. I mean, they're vital, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, if somebody is having a heart attack, you know, the first intervention is the administration of aspirin.
That thins the blood.
It thins the blood, and helps it travel through the coronary arteries, you know, to reduce the amount of damage done to the heart. So that's the first line. Obviously, they need advanced life support and definitive treatment, which is the PCI. But if aspirin is administered early, and we're there with a defib in case it develops further, and we can intervene again, but usually the ambulance, you know, where the ambulance service are there, and continue on the treatment and up to the hospital, up to definitive care. And it's all steps. It's like the, you know, the chain of survival we have for cardiac arrest. It's the same with chest pain. There's certain steps that, you know, you intervene earlier, the better outcome for the patients, obviously.
And then that obviously requires equipment and training. How do you source the equipment?
it's part of the kind of roadmap I've put out. We developed a, Newton Cunningham's very, very lucky. We have a fantastic committee and the CFR group. And we have some members that are just absolutely amazing at fundraising. Mm. We raised all the funds with the help of the local communities, and I can't thank them enough because we wouldn't be here without the funding. We got the funding, we got the equipment, and we just kept adding and adding. Mm. We've got defibs, local defibs up. I have another three boxes to go up in Walsh, you know, public access defibs. We get two boxes donated to us the other day from Dr. Dowling. And I have locations within St. Johnston, Manor Cunningham, and another one in Newton to go up. I'm hoping we're getting some funding again to put another one up in Burt, possibly Bridge End. You know, all the catchment area that we're covering. But it doesn't even stop there. We're one of the main reasons why we're here, yeah, we're celebrating with the fact that we're 1 year old.
Yeah, well, let's get down also to the nitty-gritty and fair play to that, because there are places around the county, around the region, where this type of a service is absent, and people might be listening and go, well, that sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. But where would you start? Where do you begin? What do you start with? Do you try and get an interview on the John Bresnan show, or do you try and do a fundraiser for a defib, or do you, what do you do?
Exactly.
So through this process, then, you've developed this roadmap that gives a beginning.
Right? Yeah,
because sometimes it's hard to find the beginning of something, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And you are holding an open evening this Wednesday, the 26th of April. That is in six days' time. Yeah. It's in Donaghy's Safety Training in Newtown, Cunningham. It's at 7:30 p.m. So the invitation then is for whom, Roddy?
The invitation is for communities or individuals within communities that are interested in starting up a CFR group in their area. You know, we're looking for, and I said it when I first gave the expression interest meeting in Newton, I said, this is not a have-a-go-hero thing. This is full commitment. This takes a lot of work.
I've heard this about you, by the way. You're quite direct, and that's the way you have to be.
You have to be. You can't shy away from the scenes that you may come across. So you have to prepare them. So I'm aiming at community groups who want to get a CFR group. I want individuals, there could be three or four individuals in the one area that don't actually know they're all interested in forming a CFR group. I want them to come to this open evening so I can lay out the roadmap of how to start, how to develop your committee, how to get your equipment, how to get go live, you know, in your area, and have good quality training.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the most important things, the amount of training that, that our group has done. And
but that empowers the volunteers as well, presumably.
It does,
I mean,
course.
Obviously it's better for the people that you're calling out to see, but you know, you if you feel confident in what you have to do, and there's full awareness in what you might see.
Mm-hmm. Well, Roddy has a motto, apart from smashing, everything smashing, but here's the thing, muscle memory. So if you keep doing something over and over and over again, at a, you know, you have that muscle memory there. So when you get on scene, you just know exactly what needs to happen. But
now, you don't stand still either. No. CFR that Roddy's referring to is the community first responders. In that, I mean, presumably, well, where do you want to go from here? Because you want to empower people that are in the house with other people that might need some immediate, even if something like, you know, if you have a 2-year-old and they start choking on a grape. Do we all know what to do? Now, obviously, we shouldn't give 2-year-olds grapes, but do you know, like, I presume you want everyone to have some sort of knowledge in that type of stuff.
Yeah, so I think we spoke about it before when Sean turned up to my house and surprised me. And my vision was to train everyone in good quality CPR, you know. And within the group, four of the volunteers, Paul, Katrina, Corey and Karen, all trained as instructors. So the idea was to roll out the Heart Saver course to everyone in the community, free of charge.
Yeah. And we kind of all know what you're probably kind of supposed to do, but it's only when you are in that situation Because when other time do you pump on someone's chest, right? But even to have the confidence as to know how hard to press. Am I causing damage? Am I cracking? If I hear a rib crack, if I hear a rib crack, have I done something wrong? And again, even on a local community level, if you have that knowledge, it at the time of crisis, the muscle memory or the it pops back in, doesn't it? And you think you know what you're doing, and then until such times you have to do it, you start going, well...
Yeah.
You know, so you want to get everyone having that.
Well, ideally, our long-term goal is that everybody within, well, we respond within a 10-kilometre radius. So we would like to reach out to every single household within our 10-kilometre radius and be confident that we have at least one person trained in every house who can begin CPR until one of us get there. So that's long-term.
We want to hit the first three steps in the chain of survival, which is early recognition of cardiac arrest and early call for help, early CPR and early defib.
Do you know what would be interesting is even dedicate half an hour or however it might be required in a program like this and set the cameras up, get a dummy in or whatever and go through some of those processes. You know, the actual basics?
The basics,
that's not going to achieve what you might achieve through your courses. I know that. But I'm just wondering... You know, we have the audience there. If you were to lay it out and go through some of those processes, it really might be. If it saved one life, wouldn't it be worth all the effort?
Exactly, and that's why we do this. You know, even if we save one life, if you imagine if we had more groups within Donegal to the same level and standard as the Newton Cunningham CFR group, who also train every household in their area, how to do CPR. You imagine how many people we could reach.
Karen, often with things, okay, there's a lot of enthusiasm at the start, and then people's lives are busy, and there's sometimes not as many people turn up at the meetings, and but you're talking about you have your core team still there, and there's a waiting list for people to get involved. Presumably, maybe this forms part of the roadmap. What's the secret to that? Is it the fact that 44, 49 people have been able to get quick care, and then people recognise that we're in our own community, we can do this ourselves? Is it the dogged stubbornness of Roddy? No, but you know, how have you maintained the momentum that you can go through year one? Congratulations again, and it still feels fresh and enthusiastic.
Well, like I've been doing first aid myself now for about 25 years, but every night I go to training, I still learn something. Yeah. So you're continuously learning. You're continuously keeping those skills up. And then when you are going into people's houses, like, you have to feel honoured that people are trusting you to come over that door, and you know, in their greatest time of need, they're opening the door, they're welcoming you in, and that sense of, you know,
it's amazing, isn't it?
It's a great sense. You know, you come away from there, and most of our calls seem to be in the middle of the night, and you get into your bed and your mind starts racing, and but, you know, it's the self-satisfaction that you get that you've been able to help someone is...
And then I suppose if you've got people in your own house too, you feel a bit empowered. God forbid something might happen as well. Do you know?
Yeah, realistically, we are going to... Because, you know, we're responding 10 kilometres, we usually do know the people that you're responding to. And that has ups and downs.
It's difficult too, but at the same time, it is the gift as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Roddy... What kind of gaps are there across, let's focus on Donegal, in terms of do many areas have a community first responders? Do most not have? I'm trying to think of, do I know where they are or not?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I know a few of them, obviously, because I respond in the ambulance when I'm doing my day job. And there is a few about, there's some very good groups out there. But COVID.
But there should be then... One of these across everywhere.
There should be.
So you're going to mention about COVID and how that disrupted things.
It did, because it stood down all community first responder groups. And when you have an interruption like that, people lose interest, you know, so it takes a lot to get them groups.
We're not going to get into it now, but some unbelievable decisions were taken.
And that's you
but
know.
Hopefully we've learned.
We did learn a lot from it. And if you actually look at the research on compressions during COVID times and the survival rate, and compared to
compressions is the pushing on the chest. Go ahead.
Compared to the compressions and breathing, which was the old way, it's coming back in a bit more. But there was some interesting research done on it. But unfortunately, we lost a few community first responder groups, and again, we're calling out to them if they want to come next Wednesday night again.
Kickstart.
To kickstart them and get the enthusiasm and the interest back into them areas. There is a good few groups. There's Fokara and there's the Krishla and Balkan up in Inishowen starting up again. I'm sure there's
you're going to miss,
more,
but and they understand.
You know,
that
but I think it's important too that, you know, just because you turn up on Wednesday night, you are under no kind of obligation to start a group. So it's important, you know.
But you'll be enthused too, though, I think. There's a, you won't you, hopefully?
But there's no harm in somebody walking away and saying, no, it's not for me, because it's not for everybody. So that's okay.
What we're trying to do is show them the possibilities, you know.
Do you think then the best advantage would be if I'm from an area, pick anywhere, I don't want to pick anywhere because it's probably not fair, try and bring maybe another or one person or two people with you that are like-minded.
Yes.
So even spend the next 5 days saying, look, there's something going up here, so that there's a core there, so you don't have an individual that has to walk away.
Ideally,
and start. I think if
ideally,
you could sort of, you know, I think everyone knows their heads in their own in their own area, maybe bring go as a twosome or a threesome, and I think you might walk away with, you know, the self-doubt that you may be referencing there. You know, maybe that's the best approach or one of them.
I think so. And we're trying to aim at two groups, obviously, because I know I responded within the community maybe for the past 6 years as an off-duty responder. So when I was off-duty from the ambulance, I was contacted by ambulance control to respond within my area. And that technically, that's what I still do, even though I'm connected to the CFR group as well. And I respond to different grade calls as well, because I'm an off-duty responder. So I've seen over that whole time of the need for the community or the CFR groups, and there is some brilliant CFR groups out there, and we want to develop and help develop and show them the
well, you
the
can
way.
Show them not only the things that you can do right, but also in any process there's mistakes and things to be avoided.
Exactly.
And you have all of that. This is a wealth of knowledge. This is a pack of information that does an awful lot of the groundwork.
And we're going to, you know, and that's what we're hoping to share. You know, we have all, you know, we have all our paperwork that people need. We have the kind of procedure that needs to go through, and it's not that we're just keeping that to ourselves because we want to be the most successful group. We want to share that.
Exactly.
There isn't a hierarchy amongst first responders.
Definitely
not.
You're all in the business of saving
lives. And we were helped, like, this is our way of giving back. We were helped by a group in Derry when we were setting up, who actually donated four defibs to us that enabled us to get get out and running. Yeah. So we want to do the same to some, even if it's only one other community. We want to,
you know, we've got to a stage where we can say we can actually help other groups get up and running. We want to offer our expertise within the committee. We, you know, each level of the committee, you know, the treasurer and the different areas that have specialised in different areas, to offer the help to the new committees to develop them and get them up to the same.
And, you know, when you think of the amount of call-outs this year, 44, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you multiply that, and that would have been call-outs where the best option was used to be there first, right?
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
And then you would say we had these in every parish or town in the county, and then you see what number we could be talking about over the course of the year, and then we consider what happens in their absence. It's becomes really mind-boggling, the figures, really, potentially.
This is
something we really have to be doing, not necessarily considering doing.
Exactly.
Okay. Great to hear Manor CFRs on Glenty CFRs actively recruiting. Also, we mentioned, if possible, about how hard it is to get new recruits.
It can be.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some advice in that regard as well, because you have proven that there's almost a waiting list. So, Greg, we recently put a post on our Drumkeen Facebook page asking for people to volunteer for the parish of Rafoe, which would include Rafoe, Convoy and Drumkeen. The response has been quite encouraging, but there's still more people needed. I am a big fan of Facebook, but please don't rely on it for anything, be it your business, be it for your fundraising, or what have you. You will have a same group of people, and it's not, you can have 1,000 followers and 10 people can see your post. So use all the avenues.
Greg, when we started,
text in, we'll announce it, whatever it might be, you know.
Yeah. Our initial kind of goal was if we had 6 responders, we would be happy with 6. We happen to have 16, but you know, when we set out, we thought if we get six, we can go with, we can run with six.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, if you have a core group, sometimes it's you know, they empower each other and they motivate each other to go. We have 16, and sometimes you still have that core group that are extremely dedicated,
you know.
But that core group may not always be there, and we've got 16 volunteers. You know.
Great stuff. Okay. Is that everything? Anything coming up in terms of fundraisers or anything, or have we covered everything
We have a fundraiser coming up. I think Nine Hostages Coffee is offered to do a coffee morning. Glenn approached us. Yeah. It's unbelievable. I have to thank the local communities for the support that they've shown us. It's been unbelievable. And the more and more they get to know us, the more and more support we're getting. And you want to see that replicated across communities.
And I think even that then feeds into why everyone is still enthused here on. Okay. Karen Callaghan, well done for what you do. And it's great to have you in studio. And it's a great sacrifice, but, you know, to have that beeper or phone or whatever goes off in the middle of the night to hop out of bed when you've other things to be preparing for the next morning, I'm sure. And Roddy as well, obviously a key driving force behind this. It's great to be able to reflect on a year where we know lives have been saved, but it's still going strong and looking to the future and offering people a roadmap to how you can deliver this in your area. It's an open evening. It's on Wednesday, the 26th of April in Donaghy's Safety Training in Newtown Cunningham at 7:30 p.m. And the team will be there to help you through it if this is what you want to do.
And we are on Facebook and Instagram. If anybody wants more information on the evening, they can contact us.
Newtown Cunningham NCFR is our Facebook. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. Okay.
Thanks very
Karen,
much for having us.
Roddy, thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you.
A huge response to our guests, Matt McGranahan, performing live. Congratulations, Matt. What a beautiful piece of music. We're all so proud of you from the Shields family in Kilmacrenan. Oh, Greg, I was in the middle of cleaning. I sat down, put my hand under my jaw, shut my eyes, and lo and behold, the tears were streaming. Thank you for that, says Mary. Absolutely fantastic, Matt, from Katrina in Kilmacrenan. Another wow, just unbelievable. Outstanding piece of music, says another. And I was, it's the second time I've heard it live. And hopefully it came across on the radio as it did in person. I feel very privileged to have been sitting here as one of only three people, the other two being the musicians live. How beautiful, it made me cry. Rest in peace, all who lost their lives. Another. Wow, just simply unbelievable, an outstanding piece of music. Hi, Greg, that music was stunning. Well done, Matt. Beautiful, says another. Fair play, Matt. Denise, amazing, just amazing. Touches your soul. Thank you, Matt. Denise, brilliant piece of music. Just amazing, lovely. That comes in from Evelyn Curran. Thanks for your message, Evelyn. Hi, Greg. Audrey tuned in Claddy. Thank you, Audrey, for being with us. What a beautiful piece of music, Matt, is your message. Another, I'm in tears. Such a beautiful way to remember our loved ones. Another, a beautiful piece of music. Such a beautiful piece of music by Matt McGranahan and a fitting musical memorial of Chrysler and Donegal's sense of loss. Magnificent to hear it live. And we wanted to bring Matt and Denise in to perform it live because how Matt came to decide on the name of the piece, which was a mission in and of itself, and then to construct it, and then for you to hear it live, where you can just hear every element of the musical instruments, not just the notes they play. And that's why when we were down in Dublin on Saturday, I went over to Matt and said, Matt, please, can you come in and do that for us live? Because I wanted everyone as much as possible to experience what we in that room did. Congratulations to Matt on his poignant piece of music in memory of those we lost in Chrysler. This music will outlive all of us and ensure this tragedy and those lost will never be forgotten. Great grounded philosophy, says another, by Matt. So practical, logical, but so deeply rooted in our consciousness. Very interesting interview. Thank you for that. Heard Matt playing at a service about 2 months ago and his music was just amazing. And another was at Matt's show in the courthouse in Lifford back in December. And I had mentioned that because people had mentioned it to me as to how much they enjoyed it. And then Matt very graciously invited me to attend, but it was on a night where there was something on and I missed out on it. But hopefully I'll be able to go in the future. But this listener goes on to say, so enjoyable, Matt. He's such a talented person. His music is so, so easy on the ear. And as you heard from Matt, and I suppose it's the same for all of us, we were all personally touched and continue to be touched and changed, I think, even by that awful tragedy in Chrysler, which is only, you know, 6.5 months ago. That's reflected in Matt's piece as well, I think, his personal feelings and experiences. Okay, thank you so much for listening to the show, watching the programme, getting involved. Thanks to Neve, who worked on the show, assisting Caroline Orr, who researched and produced. We're back with the usual Friday show, so hopefully you'll tune in. Have a wonderful Thursday.